Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, presented by Zwift for the Prologue Plus Stage 1 recap of the men's Tour Down Under. The women's finish yesterday. Go check out those podcasts if you missed them. But this is the first men's World Tour race of the year. It started off with a prologue, 5.5 Ks around Adelaide, in the north of Adelaide City. It was kind of pedestrian, like pave, very, very technical, and like not a fast prologue by any means either. And it also started raining. The first prologue they've ever used actually in the TDU. It'd be on road bikes only. No one used aero bar extensions because there were just so many corners. And with the rain, people did have disc wheels. Let's pretend the rain didn't happen, Benji. Do you like the idea of starting with the prologue? Because you can't judge the organizers on, well, it rained, so it had a weird result. Yeah. Like, why have they included the prologue?
I don't mind there necessarily being a prologue. It's a way for the people by the side of the road and the people that are spectating the race online and so forth on TV to see riders one by one crossing the finish line and getting to know everybody a bit in a race. So I don't mind that part. It's a bit weird to use road bikes compared to what usually is being used, the time trial bikes. But also that, I don't really care, because it's probably because of the financial reasons that all these teams would have to get all their time trial bikes shipped over to Australia to then use them once for like 5 kilometers and then basically return them afterwards. So that's very expensive for just one time trial. But looking past that, without the rain, I don't mind there being a prologue. Like, what's your take?
I think it's fine, especially when they've changed the parkour up. Like, I don't know, it just means different riders could win the race and opens it up a little bit. It did, and I think it still did that. Like, it means Bling needs to try and take time immediately if he's beaten by some sort of strong TT guys who won't be able to contest the sprints.
Does it make it somewhat like Étoile de Bessèges every year, where you have that one time trial in there, where we know that a Betiol can do that time trial, a Jake Stewart did that time trial well in previous years? Like, those type of riders did those time trials well in those early season races, and it kind of reminded me of that, because it made the race, the entire Santos Tour Down Under, kind of feel like a race with a short time trial that might spice things up a little bit. But most importantly, some hilly parkour surrounding that and some sprint parkour. Does it feel similar?
It does, because if you don't have the hills, then you have, you know, a TT specialist just winning by default. And that's sort of what Benji mentioned happened. Bethiol, who I thought was EF's leader in the race, he kind of wasn't. He admitted in the interview afterwards he went early because he wanted to tell Sean Quinn and Mikel Honoré how the course was playing. Everyone had put their leaders later because it's been really hot in Adelaide, and so you want to go as late as possible in the evening. He was going much earlier, and it worked out that he went before the rain. He was the sort of the most serious time trial rider, and he is a good time trial rider, Bettiol, that went before the rain. And he was like, yeah, I went because I was going to tell him how the course went. He ends up winning the prologue because the rain made people losing 20 seconds in the corners easily, even guys setting really fast times. It did dry out a little bit for the last few guys, but it was kind of like the Tour de France time trial where Lampard won. Like, no one got close to Bettiol, and the weather played a big part, which he acknowledged afterwards. But also, if you have a lot of strong time trial riders throughout your roster, then you're more likely to benefit from it than having one strong guy.
You're telling me that Alberto Bettiol was not supposed to be the leader. He wrote the time trial. He sets the fastest time. He goes back to Sean Quinn and Honoré. He tells them she'd ride really slow in every single corner, because Sean Quinn is lost in this time trial, and Honoré is third lost in this time trial.
Oh, both of them crashed.
That explains. That explains a lot. Because,
mate,
otherwise,
EF tires in the wet. the TT. Well, Bisaga crashed twice. Pressures are fine, though. But yeah, I don't think they got unlucky. I thought Sean Quinn was a nice outside chance for GC. Anyway, prologue, very, very weird results. Sheffield was the next best in wet conditions. He said that as well. So Sheffield, 8 seconds behind Bettiol, who set 6:19. Johansson, who is a sort of track guy for Intermarché, he's very aero on 10 seconds. Groves and Gaze on Alpecin, sort of sprinters or, you know, power mountain bike powerhouses on 11 seconds. Hugo Pasch, 6, then Meyerhofer, Steimler. Jay Vine, the best of, I would say, the climbers. Yeah, best of the climbers, if we're not going to count Sheffield in that category, on 14 seconds with Matthews. And Ethan Hayter, who was the favorite for this TT, finished in 21st on 19 seconds, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it is a lot on a 5.5K prologue. And I know that's 19 seconds to dry conditions Bettiol, but still, it's 5-7 seconds slower than other guys who were also in wet conditions. So that really made it, I was like, what are Ineos going to do? Plapp also on 20 seconds. You know, that's a big gap that Sheffield has, who looks in really good shape at this time of year. We'd see that in the stage upcoming. But before we get into that, I'll mention the Zwift Hub Challenge on Strava. Ride 25Ks, which I believe is 16 miles. My Fahrenheit to Celsius conversion is not as good. Ride 25Ks to unlock $50, £50, or €50 off of Zwift Hub, and also go in for a chance to win $1,500. Or over £1,000 worth of indoor cycling tech. You can join the challenge on Strava. There's over 105,000 participants, hopefully all of them getting on board with the Zwift Hub extra discount, and you can join them hopefully on Zwift afterwards. That's the beauty of the Zwift Hub. It gets you on Zwift on the most affordable trainer in its class in the market. And you can also ride indoors, outdoors, or hand cycle to complete this challenge as well. So if you want to check it out, go to the link down below, or Strava Challenges, or Swift.com. But what did you think after that TT, Benji? You were Ineos last night around the dinner table. What changes for you? Because you've got Plapp, motivated Aussie champion, but not a sprinter. You've got Hayter, their best probably sprinter here. You've got Sheffield in good shape, also not a sprinter, but sets the best time in the prologue outside of Bettiol. How do you play it?
When it comes to the tree, I'd say that on paper, Plapp is the better climber for this race, while Ethan Hayter is the better sprinter who can take bonus seconds left and right throughout the race and get closer by the time we hit those hills, and might have the quality to get over those hills with the best riders, but it's kind of like on the edge, for example. Because like when it comes to course crew, for example, 2.4 kilometers, 9%, that's like on the edge for me when it comes to Ethan Hayter if the real puncher types go on that climb. But Magnus Sheffield is kind of a question mark, because last year he was really strong across versatile terrain. In Denmark, he went over hills and was really strong there as well. And then he ended up winning Brabantse-Pijl. You need to get over hills for that. That's not a 2.4 kilometer, 9% climb though. But he also seems to have lost weight a bit if I look at him compared to last year. So maybe his climbing has improved. We don't know that yet. But Magnus Sheffield, clearly the rider in the best position here. And it's quite a distance on the other rider. So it's difficult. It's difficult to now say after this prologue, okay, everything on Magnus Sheffield, because Ethan Hayter could suddenly take 12 seconds in intermediate sprints in the coming 3 days and therefore be close once again and end up competing once again or win a stage here or there.
Buckling's ahead of him.
So that's very true.
On what climb will is Hayter going to drop Bling on Corkscrew? Because that's where he'd have to make the difference, right?
Yeah, and he'd either have to drop him or he'd need to take more bonus seconds than Matthews along the way throughout the race, which is also kind of on-the-edge scenario. So I think it's useful that Ineos does have multiple riders in that scenario, because then a Plapp can go all out while an Ethan Hayter tries to stay with a Matthews, and they can try and create a situation like that. Or a Magnus Sheffield could play early before the corkscrew, whatever. I'm just inventing something, eh? Before like a climb to try and create a different scenario to put pressure on Jake Olula. So I think the factor of having multiple riders in that top 20 is still valuable. Well, not top 20, because Hayter was not in the top 20 on paper. So when it comes to Ineos, I'd say just multiple riders. Anything more you need to say about them?
I'll address it a bit more during the stage. We did want to mention Peo Bilbao, who I quite like Bilbao. He had one of the most outrageous setups I've ever seen on a road bike. He had like even Dan Bigham, if you're listening, or someone's like, Dan Bigham, I'll be honest, is this too far even for you? What we saw with his inverted hoods, they were, I swear to God, horizontal. So he was using all his forearms for support in the prologue. He obviously he'd never ride in a race like that, a road race. Is this allowed? Because you can't use forearms for support normally, although it's very inconsistently policed by the UCI. But is there an exception in TTs? Like, are you allowed to do puppy paws in TTs?
Well, in TTs on paper with a time trial bike, it's obvious that you get into a situation where you have your time trial hoods to lean into. But if you're racing with a regular road bike, then I generally don't know if there's an exception for that. I can't instantly think of one that I must have read in the rules. So it's quite intriguing. It's quite noticeable. And I was curious whether the UCI was going to step in some shape or form. And it wouldn't surprise me that even if the factor that they didn't step in now, because they didn't do anything to Bilbao, Bilbao ended up having the time that he said at the finish line perfectly set. So the UCI didn't step in and do anything to him. So maybe that means that they will adapt it in the future to make sure that this isn't allowed. Or should this be allowed?
Because yeah, that's exactly what will happen. Bilbao will get away with it. Someone else thinks it's okay. And then they'll probably win. And then they'll get disqualified.
Because what's the danger here, eh? Because puppy paws was always complained about because a lot of riders were an Amador was riding in a peloton. Yeah. A danger to others. But if you're doing a solo ride, a time trial, is that danger really there?
Well, only to yourself. And, that's are you policing how quickly they go into corners? Seven guys crashed in this prologue because it was wet on a bike path / pedestrian area. Nearly ended up in the Torrens River. Tough to police. I don't know. I actually don't know the answer. I presume it's allowed. It looks funky. I like Bilbao. Best descender in the world. And yeah.
Of course, true. He's always descend.
It's not that technical. It really isn't. It's a pedaling descent.
Give me hope.
It's really not that technical. Grace Brown just powered back to Sprat. We saw that. Anyway, on to the next stage. Stage one from Tanunda. This is in the Barossa Valley. Back to Tanunda. They do a circuit around Mengler's Hill. Not that hard. 4.5 Ks, 3.7%. They did it 5 times. There is a 6.9% 500 meter section at the end. So, that's not false flat. It does, though, crest with about 14 Ks from the finish, and then there's a descent, and then about a 5K flat run into town. Wide roads for the most part. Lacking road furniture. We're in, pretty much rural Australia here. Yet it was really, really nervous. I know there was EF controlling for Bettiol in the Oka leader's jersey, but it seemed to me today, Benji, a really nervous day for, listen, I like TDU, but it's stage one, sprint stage of TDU.
Yeah, and we noticed that in the amount of crashes that happened throughout the stage. Now, let's first talk about the one-man legend breakaway that launched, Nals Petters. He was in the break. I can't say much more than that because I wasn't awake yet when he started the breakaway.
Tour de France stage,
basically. Yeah, that's true. And didn't he win a Giro stage as well in the first week at some point? Vaguely remember something like
He's trying to complete the triple Giro Tour TDU.
He'll need to do a bit better than 2022 to get that triple personally, but I guess I hope for Nals Petters that he completes it. Obviously, TDU not working out because he eventually got caught. But before that happened, he took he took the first spot at the intermediate sprint, the first intermediate sprint. And there was a pretty straightforward intermediate sprint. Matthews pretty much stomped Ethan Hayter in that sprint. So like we said on the prologue discussion, Ethan Hayter would have to take time on Matthews in these intermediate sprints. And, it's not happening because Matthews is taking time on Ethan Hayter. It's only 1 second, but it's a second that matters. And Matthews getting a tiny bit closer to the front of the race as well at his intermediate sprint. Crashes happened in the peloton, by the way, in the run-in towards his intermediate sprint. And it was the Belgian sprinters that were hurt the most. Like, what does Australia have against Belgians? I want to ask that question because Jordi Meus, the legend of the Schwalbe Classic, he didn't win, but I'm still calling him a legend because he came from far and ended up second or something in that race, if I recall correctly.
Second, in a non-UCI criterion.
Legend.
Nah, he's actually good. He's good.
Right? I actually generally think that 2023 could be a year where he launches forward and does better. Then again, he would have won Vuelta sprints,
but he got injured. He would have won. He would have gone to the Vuelta. Yeah, got injured.
Possible, but then again, Bennett won too, so I don't think they're complaining in that team.
Kevin Tyson,
sad story, but the man hit the floor and he had a ripped up jersey already at that point. Patrick Bevan, also one of the crashed riders. I swear the dude crashed also in the Schwalbe Classic pretty hard, actually.
Did he crash today? He did crash very hard in the Schwalbe Classic. I know he abandoned today. He had a banged up ankle. His bike was like in bad shape in the Schwalbe Classic, and he was probably DSM's GC guy for this race because he can sprint, he can climb pretty well. His prologue would have been okay. You know, he beat Hayter and Dennis and co in a sprint at Romandy last year.
I think Myatt Holford is the new leader. As in, his sprint is okay, his prologue was okay, and I vaguely remember that he had an okay climbing. I'm saying,
was he in relatively survivable with Remco?
Exactly. That's the one race I remember the guy from.
That's the guy, yeah.
The German from the Remco U23 or Junior World Champs. Was that U23 or Junior?
I think it's Juniors. I think it's Juniors. Yeah. Otherwise, it's Juniors.
The age didn't make sense otherwise. But hey, that's a scenario going into this next crash. Okay, we're going over crashes here. That's actually really fucked.
It just seems really nervous. And Bauer said it afterward. It just seemed really nervous.
And his teammate is one of the riders that crashed. Herman Pernsteiner, the king of trying to get into the last breakaways in the Vuelta and slipping in the top 10. Herman Pernsteiner crashed together with Sjoerd Buks and Finn Fischer-Black, two riders from UAE. Still a quick steps, James Knox as well on the floor. So a bit of a bummer because I was hoping that we see a resurrection this year from the man because he was not there in 2022, basically. And some guy from UniSA Australia, so the Australian national team in the race as well. That was also a crash. And those riders, I think most of those actually got back up and straight up kept riding. Intermediate Sprint 2 comes up. And that was a less straightforward one, yeah? Because, like, Corbin Strong was the fastest, the strongest in the intermediate. You see what I did there? I feel very intelligent.
And Patez has been caught at this point. Brake's been reeled back. EF's been pacing. So Patez has been caught.
What happened with Matthews?
He was just behind a little bit. He didn't get a full lead out. He was just doing it sort of TDF green jersey style, just following, and not. He didn't seem to be going all out. He's obviously thinking of the final sprint. Ineos, using Hayter to go for the intermediate sprints, which suggests to me that, well, he has to be going for the final sprints and he has to be their GC guy because Matthews is 5 seconds before the stage ahead of him on GC. And now Matthews is taking seconds. And all that's really happening is Matthews is being brought closer to Sheffield. And Hayter's sort of not really catching up to Matthews either. And so Hayter, Strong wins easily and Hayter kind of bike throws like 15 meters early and then stops, and Matthews comes around, takes an extra second. So 4 seconds already for Matthews, which he was happy about. So he's inching closer already to Sheffield. I think he even overcame him in GC by the end of the stage.
Now, a question, of course, that I have is, we see Luke Plaab going for the K1 points in this race, attacking multiple times to go for these K1 points. I was kind of surprised by that because I didn't expect him to care. Because, like, I expect him to be like a GC rider in this race, together with an Ethan Hayter, together with a Magnus Sheffield at the moment for that team. And then he's going for K1 points, where I'm like, I love the fuck out of Luke Plaab as a rider, but the man outgrew K1 points. It's like Simmons going for K1 points at Tirreno.
Yeah. Agree. A good comparison. Yeah, it's kind of like, I thought he'd be going for GC because that's in his shape. And I thought, like we said at the start of this, I thought at least, okay, maybe Maybe Ineos think Sheffield can't contest the intermediate sprints, so Hayter has to do it to try and take bonus away from Matthews, and he gets closer to Bettiol and GC. Okay, understood. Yep. Plap, I thought, could be used if he's kept close to go for like a long-range attack to make Jayco chase, his big engine, so, you know, good at national champs, and Sheffield's there as well, who can counter. He's similar to Plap. And yeah, I was surprised. Maybe Benji, maybe they told him after the prologue, it's all in on Hayter for GC. So I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, I was surprised to see that. Kovi beat him for that. I think he's wearing two shoes that are the same color. Whether that makes him even better this season, I don't know. Perhaps anything's possible. Anyway, more crashes. Robert Hessink goes down. He has to abandon the race. Goes down really hard. Baudin from Age Desert, I don't know. He got pushed out and then bumped him down. Hessink hit his head pretty hard from what I could see. The other guy, Jumbo guys went down, but seemed to survive okay. And just a nervous run-in, if we go through to the finale now, with Bettiol. Lately, I think Bettiol is like not in top shape, because Bettiol is actually really fast when he tries. Like, he came second in a Tour de Suisse sprint last year, not top 10 here. And it was a weird run-in because Quickstep took it up Benji, say, last 3Ks. Yeah. And I was like, but who for? Like, was it for Stan Van Tricht?
Well, apparently not. It didn't look like it was for Stan Van Tricht when I was looking at the actual race, but I felt like it was more than one team that was taking control from 3K to go, and it really was Quickstep that pierced through towards the end because Cataneo started hammering it. We had Bahrain on one side of the road. We had Quickstep on the other side of the road. We had Alpecin trying to push through, and before Quickstep really punch it at the front, I feel like Alpecin tried to move up with Rob Stannard, with Groves and another teammate in the wheel, or even only Groves in the wheel of Rob Stannard. And I feel like they just disappeared, and I didn't see Groves at all because the guy was really close on the initial prologue. Like, that top five in the prologue told me, like, okay, Groves is looking good. I'm looking forward to seeing him sprint here. But the lead up towards the sprint was really bad for Alpecin, and I'd say that with 2K to go, Alpecin disappeared. 1.5k to go, I didn't see them at all. And that's when Quickstep pierced through at the front, then really started smashing it with Cataneo with Yannick Steimler in the wheel, which seemed to be their Steimler, option here.
Yep. Yeah, because no, that makes sense.
Steimler was also really close in that initial prologue on like 8th, so he's not that far in GC. He's got a relative sprint, like we're saying a relative sprint because
Tour of Slovakia, let's be honest about 5th.
It. Yeah. Abrasturi can't beat him sprint. Right?
Yeah.
Which is our new rating system. Can Abrasturi beat you or not? But Quickstep pierced through, lined it up, and I felt like other teams were pushed to the back a bit, but Ewan was one of the riders that was hurt most from that because Ewan was trying to benefit from the Jayco Alula terrain, and he lost the wheel there a few times, tried to get to the wheel back again, and it was really troublesome when it comes to positioning. And all those solo riders had trouble, but I felt like there was one team or two teams that had more than one rider, which was the Bauhaus team that still had more than one rider, but they were kind of thrown around, like one rider here, then three positions later, Bauhaus was sitting there, so not really the perfect train. And I feel like Jayco was looking the best ride with like three riders in a row with Matthews in last.
Yeah, I mean, Bauhaus, he did have Gradac doing work earlier, but it really was Nikias Arndt as the last guy for him. Jayco actually could take control with Hepburn, and I think Harper was supposed to be there, but he was caught up in a crash. It was Campbell Stewart last. So you do have Jayco basically take front position. At the same time, Mayus has been brought up, I assume, by Shane Archbold. Might have been somebody else. And Mayus is leaning on an Israel EF rider. It looked like he touched wheels and went down. He was just leaning on a rider, and then they move their body weight over and they start leaning on another rider to their left. And without that balance, he just goes down and Mayus crashes. I think Sheffield's caught up in the crash. We'll circle back to that. But that takes out, I think, Alpecin, if I had to guess, because they have no one in the top 20. But they still like fucked up the lead out.
Fucked.
Alpecin. Yeah. Like, we're talking late in the sprint here and 12 wheels deep. This is the difference between Matthews and Hayter at the moment as well. Matthews didn't have everything go right in this sprint. It looked like he almost dropped his chain. He lost positions. And then all of a sudden, with 1K to go, he's fifth wheel. And yes, Bling doesn't have the Groenewegen sprint. He's like not, he's obviously very fast, but he's not as fast as Ewan and Co. But for bonus seconds, following wheels, drafting, being consistent in these sprints, that's what he's really good at for GC in this race, relevantly. Ewan's there and then slip back. Bauhaus is on Bling's wheel, and Bauhaus just jumps Bling, who'd been waiting for, I think it was, Campbell Stewart was leading him out. Stewart doesn't open up the gap to the barrier. He's sort of sitting, there's not enough space to the barrier, but doesn't pull either side. What Mercu would have done in Campbell Stewart's position is always to pull over to the open side.
Yeah.
And that forces a Bauhaus who's jumping to lose momentum and go a bit further to the right, which you can call dirty, but you can also call experience. It's effective either way you look at it. And then Matthews can go in a straight line to the barrier and he's shutting off a side. He didn't do that. Bauhaus jumps him early, long sprint, and Bauhaus is probably as fast, if not a bit faster than Matthews, but not as fast as Ewan, but he's able to hold it to the line with Bling getting into his draft, coming back out of it to the barriers. Credit to Bauhaus, by the way, for he did sprint straight for a guy. Sometimes he hasn't. He left that gap. He didn't close that gap to the barriers to Bling. And Ewan flashes super late to coming second. But we've seen that a lot. Remember Saudi 2 last year, Benji? So there's a Saudi 2 sprint where Ewan just came. But you can only say it so many times. Like, that's just what happens all the time. Like, of course, if he gets a clean drop-off at 150, he wins. But he didn't. So he didn't win. So great win for Bauhaus. Bling, solid as always, third, takes 4 bonus seconds. And this is what Phil Bauhaus does.
Yep. Messy sprints whenever Phil Bauhaus is there. Like that Tirreno sprint, for example. Was it last year or a few years ago? He was there and he delivers in that messy sprint. So it's like whenever there's a messy sprint, Bauhaus is winning those sprints most likely. So that's once again the scenario here. I feel like Ewan does show that he has a speed once again. But again, like you said, it's 12th to 11th position from 200 meters to go. It's very difficult to win the race then. And the question is, like, how did he get into that bad position? He doesn't have the best lead out here. I think Drizner is here still for him as a teammate. But I swear that he was doing most of it alone. He was using that Jake Olula terrain to his advantage whenever he could, but then lost the wheel towards the final and then had to sprint from the wheel of Kokar even, who had a bad sprint, like 12th, but Ewan went from that wheel and then started sprinting towards the front. So with a better lead out, with a more straightforward sprint, if he gets into a good position, he destroys this field easily. But that's usually not the case with Caleb Ewan, and that's once again not the case here. I will say, with the sprint that he has today, I wouldn't be surprised if he wins a stage of this Tour Down Under. Because his sprint is there, he just needs to get the positioning right, but that depends on how the race goes for the rest of the teams as well. Because there's, I'd say Jayco is really the team. What if Alpecin get it right? Yeah, or Jayco gets it properly right and he's near the wheel, or Bauhaus' team gets it really right and he's near the wheel. Like, if that works out, if he gets that right position, then he can really make this happen. But I'm kind of surprised by, like, the other riders in the sprint. Like, Alessandro Covi, I didn't know he had such a decent sprint. Like, sure, it was from the wheels of other riders. It was not a pure sprint that he went from head-on 200 meters to go and started launching there. He was coming from wheels, but Covi had a goddamn good sprint here. And Paul Penouet, youngster from Groupama FDJ, they've got a bit of a difficult life where they either have to go for, like, a Piffy, who is pretty fast, but kind of more a versatile sprinter, I would say, than a pure sprinter. And then Penouet is really the purer sprinter in that team who has done decent results, I think, last year in Coupe de France races, if my memory serves me right. Well, I don't see them, those results, but I'm going to pretend that they exist just for the sake of my argument. Otherwise, it's really sad now. So,
no, he's a good sprinter. That guy.
Okay.
He's good.
Yeah. Okay. And we see that Herben Thijssen, who fell on his face twice in this race. Was it twice or did he crash once? Once only. Mays was twice.
Once, Mays twice.
Herben Thijssen still 10th. So, I don't know what would happen if he doesn't have that crash. His lead out wasn't outrageous either in this race necessarily. He was kept to the front while Cataneo was doing that lead out for Steimler. Steimler, who finished 14th, so that Cataneo lead out, oof, very valuable in this race. I don't know. In the end, Phil Bauhaus wins. Caleb Ewan second from a pretty far distance. Matthews getting that third spot. And that's how it goes when it comes to the stage. But GC-wise is where it gets interesting, right? Because Matthews jumps across like 8 people, right?
Matthews is already into second based on how today went. And Sheffield, obviously, he went or not obviously, Sheffield went down in the crash, who was second on GC and also leader of the Zwift Young Riders competition. Bertiol, I think, was caught up. He didn't crash. He was caught behind the crash. So obviously he was also given the same time. But yes, Matthews moves from 10th to 2nd, now on 6 seconds. That could be gone tomorrow because Bertiol, like as I said, I don't think he's in his Olympics shape, nor should he be, frankly. Like this guy is going to be trying to win Tour of Flanders. Sheffield moves into 3rd. He's still on 8 seconds. And so everyone sort of moves down a few spots. Strong moves up 4 spots. He's on 13 seconds now, 7 seconds behind Matthews. Unless Bertiol, like, let's be real, Matthews will take more bonus seconds before Corkscrew. I don't think Bertiol can just ride away from Matthews on Corkscrew on the weekend. I really don't see it.
We saw it on Mond, right? The battle versus... Between Bertiol and Matthews.
That was them on Mond.
I will say Bertiol has had decent punchy races in the past. And it's kind of a rider where you'd have a godlike Bertiol. You'd have a godlike Bertiol like in Mikuni Pass Bertiol.
Like, that's what I mean. Olympics, he was unreal.
Like he was getting the record on that climb before the race even started. But he didn't actually be able to follow like the Pogacars of the world that day. Then again, I don't expect him to be in that form here. I wouldn't be surprised if Bertiol just has a better year overall, though. But then again, we can't base it off of the preseason because he also like won the prologue 2 years ago of Bessège, right? So I think he won that race even Bessège. So I don't know. In the end, Matthews on paper has the upper hand when it comes to being able to take bonus seconds and even when it comes to some versatile sprints that are upcoming. But you never know with Bertiol. If he has that one day like that Ronde van Vlaanderen day in 2017? 19?
I don't know. Maybe not.
No clue. One of the years that existed pre-COVID. In the past. Yeah, exactly. If he had that day, then maybe he destroys everybody on the climb. But there's plenty of people that might be competing for that stage, like a Jay Vine, perhaps, that are still on 14 seconds in GC as well.
Yeah.
Can a Jay Vine still compete and drop these people by... Can Jay Vine drop Matthews by 8 seconds on Corkscrew? Is the descent, it's shorter than the women's, right? The descent than the flat section afterwards?
But like Yates should be working for Matt. Like Simon Yates is here, by the way. Like Jayco should have Harper if he's okay. Yates working. I feel like Matthews is now virtually the de facto leader of the race. No disrespect to Bertiol, but like the whole parkour is so stacked against him. Yeah. Like the intermediate sprint, for example, let's look at tomorrow. From Brighton in the south beach suburb of Adelaide, going really far south down to Victor Harbour. They usually have a stage finishing there. There's the intermediate sprint at Aldinger Beach. Like Jayco, let me have a look. It's 32Ks in. Jayco should probably control so that there's not a break of 3 riders. EF should hope that a break goes with 3 riders to gobble up those bonus seconds. There's then a climb. It's 1K 8.7%, the steep part on Heatherdale Hill, but it's longer than that. Then there's a step descent. There's another intermediate sprint, 70Ks in at Yankalilla after that descent. And then they do the Parawa Hill, 3K 7%. It's a much harder parkour than the one we had today. And then a sort of rolling downhill to Victor Harbour. Then they go up Nettle Hill. This is 22Ks from the finish. It's a Cat 1, even though it's a little bit lower than Parawa Hill. It's 2Ks 8% descent. Then Green Hills Road, 3Ks 3%. Just a nasty uphill drag to deaden the legs, 10Ks from the finish. Bling said today in the finish he was happy with the stage, as Jayco should be, even though he didn't win, like took a lot of bonuses, but he was hoping the stage today had been a bit harder, for obviously with opponents like Bauhaus and Ewan. Tomorrow, you know, if I was them, and he's in good shape, if I was them, I would put Yates and Harper to really push Nettle Hill, and it might not fully keep people behind. But it's certainly like Ewan and Bauhaus do not want Nettle Hill paced full gas.
Yeah. I agree. It's also like it is 22 kilometers to go, but it's 2 kilometers, 7.8%. It's actually like almost close to the Corkscrew gradients, I would say.
It's pretty hard.
Exactly. The purest sprinter should have issues here if other teams like a Jayco really pushes on this climb. And if you're Ineos, don't you try and force to make this as hard as possible, to make it as easy as possible 100%. For Ethan Hayter positioning wise towards the end? Because like,
he's it's not also good not in big flat
afterwards, eh? Yeah, true. So you try and reduce it, and if you're Jacob, then you're like, well, might as well be okay with that. A UniSA Caleb Ewan, that's a team where I'm like, well, do they ride in support in the Australian team?
Does that
Australian team? Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Well, the support is not that gigantic either, because like three of their riders were in the last like five riders of stage
well,
one.
Well, three of the guys are track guys. So like, I assume they're not going to be able to get over Nettle Hill and then just power him back if he gets dropped.
Why is James Wheeling not here instead of like one of those like track riders?
Oh, I'll give a couple of names. Like there's Reese Robotham, who won Tour of Tasmania. There's Elliot Schultz, who's young, who won. No, didn't win, but he came to go on national champs.
Patrick,
and Tristan Saunders. No, I'm washed as fuck. I'm talking young guys. I would like to see guys who are not on the track program, are not Lotto Destiny point farming, because Caleb's points count to the team, and who haven't had a chance at World Tour level yet. I think, personally, that's what the team spot should go to, because the track guys, they get contracts generally pretty easily in World Tour. Not easily, but if they're good enough, they'll get picked up. Wellsford, Plapp, Kale, you know, that's fine. They're good enough to be in World Tour. I'm just saying. Yeah. Anyway, what do Ineos do tomorrow? I would send Plapp over the top of Nettle Hill and force Jayco to do something, see if they can. This is one of the stages where I think no time like the present to use those numbers. If Chef is okay, maybe he can go to Sergeant Chef. Sheffield. He's a beast, Sheffield. He is going to win the Tour de France, that kid. He's so good.
This year.
Not this year. 2025, Sheffield.
Not Pidcock. It's done, the Pidcock dream. It's Sheffield.
Peacock wins this year, and then Sheffield 25. Yeah. But also, and then Ayuso 24.
But you said Henrik Maas would win this year. Like, it's getting difficult now, eh? Having multiple riders win the same tour in the same year.
Yeah. Maybe Tour de Suisse, I meant. not Tour de France. Anyway, it's really interesting to see what Ineos do. To me, it looks like a lot of different moving parts, not necessarily in concert with each other right now. Maybe Plapp just goes for the KOM tomorrow as well. But I think they do need to reduce it. They need to reduce it. Anyway, that's our TDU recap. We will have a Cav Astana separate reaction dropping later today. We need to collect our thoughts. We wanted to do an emergency, but I was just asleep. So I don't know. The emergency siren klaxon alarm doesn't reach my bedroom in Australia. So we apologize, but we will have a nice little recap of that dropping later, probably evening time, Europe. Midday North America. But thanks as always. Thanks to Zwift. Should be a reduced bunch sprint tomorrow, unless Ineos have something up their sleeve. We'll see with a recap of that then. Ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.